Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Erin Whalen, and I represent the Chilkat Indian Village of Klukwan and the other plaintiffs in this case. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, and I will watch the clock for that. This case is about the Bureau's obligation to apply NEPA to the fullest extent possible when it acts under any statute, and whether the agency met that obligation when it entirely refused to consider the potential impacts of eventual mine or possible mine development when approving Constantine's final stage of mineral exploration, and how those impacts would affect the Chilkat Valley, where so many, including my clients, depend on the natural resources that would be placed at risk by a potential mine. In the interest of time today, I'd like to focus on two issues. First, the NEPA principle this court described in Connor v. Burford, why that principle dictates the Bureau may not postpone all analysis of development impacts until it may no longer have the authority to preclude those impacts. And second, the fact that the Bureau's refusal to consider development impacts also violates NEPA's cumulative impacts requirement, because at this final stage of exploration, development was reasonably foreseeable. With respect to our connected actions argument, we rest on the briefs, but I'm available to answer any questions you may have. The basic NEPA rule described in Connor v. Burford is that the government can't give up its authority to absolutely preclude development impacts without having some understanding of what it's giving up. In other words, what the unavoidable impacts of development will be. Connor applied that rule in the Mineral Leasing Act context, where the relinquishment of authority is direct through a lease. And in this context, under the 1872 mining law, the right to extract minerals and the authority to preclude is transferred differently. The right is transferred differently, and authority is lost by a different mechanism. But the difference between these two statutory schemes is not a reason to allow an uninformed decision that may commit the government to allowing development contrary to NEPA's purposes.
Counsel, can I ask you to just address head-on your opponent's response to this line of argument? And that is that they say in Connor, the difference is that the agency that was being charged with violating NEPA actually did have the authority on its own to irretrievably, or whatever the word is in the statute, commit the government's resources. It had the discretion to even grant that the right, for further development or not. Whereas here, BLM really is not the agency that holds the cards in that sense, right? It's according to them, the agency actually doesn't have the authority to stop development ultimately at all, unless and until the secretary withdraws the land. So maybe you can just respond to that perceived difference in the two cases.
Yes, the secretary and the Bureau did have discretion here. The distinction between the secretary and the Bureau is not particularly important here, because at the end of the day, the public citizen doctrine that the defendants are relying on is about when an agency has no ability to prevent impacts. And here the Bureau undoubtedly had an ability to request, apply for a withdrawal, which the secretary, if the secretary ultimately approved, would become permanent. And even if the secretary approved the application, it would trigger an automatic segregation that would become a basis, even under the defendant's interpretation of the Bureau's regulations, to deny the exploration plan at issue here. In other words, the agency has authority to seek that withdrawal at any time, not just in the context of land management planning, and then having requested a withdrawal, assuming its application is approved by the secretary, then has authority under its own regulations to deny an exploration plan on that basis. The sequence is consistent with the regulations, and that sequence of operations is also what the Bureau has done elsewhere in the Montana case that we cited. So having that authority, the Bureau couldn't essentially ignore that it was giving up that authority, that it was risking the loss of that authority by approving this exploration. In other contexts, when the agency...
Can I stop you there and follow up on Judge Watford's question? Because as I understand your argument, and I share his concern about trying to get your best response to your opponent's counter, which seems to me that the thing you're concerned about, the dynamic you're concerned about, is that this project brings your opponent, incrementally one step closer to exploration. And that seems to me a function of the mining law. And so I think that's what Judge Watford's getting at. And if it is indeed a function of the statutory scheme that you're operating in, I don't understand any limiting principle to the argument you're making. I mean, every step along the way in the exploration process, presumably, gets a party one step closer to production. So do you want to respond to that?
Yes, thank you. The concern is not that that exploration is proceeding one step closer, but it's that the Bureau is approving this final stage of exploration, which will cross the threshold or will likely cross the threshold of committing to ultimate development. In other words, it's the commitment that is the issue and concern and the reason that the rule in Connor should apply.
Well, this is why it seems that your first and second arguments, we're setting aside, I think, your third for today, because you submitted that in your briefs. But the first and second arguments to me seem to be really intertwined with the notion that, at some point, the future production is a foreseeable consequence, that you've crossed that Rubicon. And I'm trying to figure out why you think this particular approval gets you there, right, under our case law. And you know, of course, I'm going to want you to answer in light of the Jones case. Why should we decide that you're there?
Well, absolutely. But with respect to the Jones case, that argument pertains to the cumulative impacts argument and not the Connery-Burford argument.
Yes.
The reason that
you
know...
Why I'm saying to me to be very, very closely linked, because in both instances, it seems to me what you're really arguing is that this project has been creeping along, as many of these do, for many, many years, and that you now think that this approval really puts them into this other category and impacts two different ways, right?
Yes, although the foreseeability analysis, the cumulative impacts analysis, is really a forward-looking requirement, and the Connery-Burford principle is the last point in time at which the agency can do an analysis of development impacts, having made a commitment. The reason we know this is a commitment here, the reason we know there was a serious risk that the agency could lose its authority, which is undisputed in this case, is that Constantine, in his plan of operations, and this is at pages 293 and 302 of excerpts of record, Constantine said, first of all, that this was approximately a five-year plan, and that at the end of that five-year plan, they would be prepared to make a decision, assuming continued positive results, prepared to make a decision, whether a go, no-go decision on development, essentially. But the way that the Mining Act functions, by the time the company makes that decision, it will have already done the exploration needed, impliedly, to have made a valuable discovery. And by that point, the agency has lost its authority. That's why...
I appreciate that argument, and that's why it seems to me that, and maybe I'm just repeating myself, but it seems to me on that argument, which is your first argument, that result is a function of the Mining Act.
It is. And yet, and regardless of whether it's a function of the Mining Act, the fact that it's a function of the Mining Act is something that the Bureau has to be aware of when acting under the Mining Act. And all that NEPA requires is that the agency just make that decision in an informed way. The interaction of the Mining Act with FLIPMA, the Federal Land Policy and Management Act, is that the FLIPMA allows the Bureau to make a withdrawal at any time. And the agency has that discretion and essentially can't put blinders on to that discretion in making this decision on exploration. And again, what we're asking here is just analysis of development impacts, not that the agency make a withdrawal, only that it not cross the threshold of potentially committing to that withdrawal without the information in hand. That's consistent with
But the essence of the district court's decision on the cumulative impacts analysis is that the agency didn't have, and they're not required to take into account, this goes to Jones, admittedly, really an unquantifiable future project. And you know the quote I'm going to refer to on page 1001 of Jones, right?
Yes, well, but I would refer Your Honor to a quotation from this court's decision in Connor, which is that, the government's inability to fully ascertain the precise extent of effects of development, essentially, is not a justification for failing to estimate what those effects might be before irrevocably committing. And although the commitment here is less direct as a function of the Mining Act, which is distinct, NEPA's the obligation under NEPA is to apply its requirements to the fullest extent possible and ensure informed decision making. And the only way, and this court has interpreted that requirement to mean apply NEPA's requirements unless there's an irreconcilable conflict. There's no conflict between requiring, posed by requiring the Bureau to do the analysis here, some analysis of development impacts, not the kind of analysis that the Bureau will ultimately do if Constantine submits a mine development plan. And I want to emphasize that doing an analysis of development impacts even before exploration is something this court has frequently held, or shouldn't say frequently, but has held that the agency must do, and that the Bureau does all the time in other contexts, especially leasing contexts.
All right, so I'm just going to get out of your way, except I have one follow-up question, and I appreciate that there are cases going both ways, factually dependent cases going both ways. The district court in this case found that there wasn't sufficient information about what this future project is or where it's going to be, and it wasn't quantifiable or measurable. And for those reasons, those are my words, not his, but that is my summary. He decided that the agency was not required to take this into account. So I'd like you to point me to the record or explain to me, now I'm talking just factually, why you think the district court was wrong about there being inadequate data in the record.
Well, it goes to what the purpose of the analysis is and what the analysis needs to be. Because if the analysis needs to be full-scale mine plan analysis along the lines of what will happen when Constantine submits that plan, then the district court is absolutely correct. That information may not be available at this point in time. But the purpose, and I think this is what eluded the district court, the purpose of the analysis here is not that. It is just sufficient analysis based on the best available information. And there is information available in the record about what mine development impacts are generally, hard rock mine development impacts, the impacts that are risks are that are associated with developing this particular kind of mine, and information about the receiving environment. For example, and I don't want to stray too far from answering your question, but in Conner v. Burford, the agency was looking at 700 leases across two different forests and 1.3 million acres. Of those, 2% would likely lead to development. So think about the difficulty in the analysis that the agency was required to do there. Here, we know that the Bureau, Constantine is exploring a defined set of claims and has been for decades with success. And so the scope, for example, the receiving environment is much more clearly defined than was the case in Conner. And so Conner's requirement would not yield under the circumstances here with the information, the quantum of information that's available. We know.
Can I ask, though, just if you're able to put a finer point on what the analysis that the BLM would do in your view would look like? They're supposed to say, okay, well, we have to assume the worst from the standpoint of the environment, which is number one, that these exploration efforts bear fruit, but they do yield a deposit or whatever that's worth pursuing financially. And then what? Then you would scale the operation on like kind of the worst case scenario. Every single possible area they hope to mine would in fact be developed, and that's how they would. How would the Bureau do it? Because they don't know what the scale or the scope of the eventual operation would be, right?
Well, as I mentioned before, projecting out development impacts even before exploration has begun is something the agency is skilled at doing, has staff members that do, and does all the time in other contexts, analogous contexts like oil and gas development. And the information at that stage isn't perfect and isn't required to be perfect. It might be a range of impacts, for example, a range of possible development. And the question that the agency has to answer with that is anything within this range acceptable? And assuming it is, then the agency can proceed to make the decision. If the agency is aware, though, based on that range of impacts, that nothing in that range is acceptable, given the importance of the natural resources here, then the agency would have the opportunity to seek a withdrawal prior to a discovery and vesting of rights, which the agency is essentially cheating itself out of. There will be no opportunity to do that assessment and potentially make a withdrawal if appropriate, because the Bureau has refused entirely to look at those development impacts in any manner whatsoever. I hope that answered your Honor's question. I'd like to mention a few issues.
So can I ask you for some clarification? So I understood the process, the Bureau or Secretary, I'm not going to equate them as the same, they're not. The Secretary could withdraw the area, could withdraw the land, and could do that any day now, between now and whenever, now and when this exploration effort concludes, regardless of what Constantine finds or doesn't find in their exploration. So the Secretary still has the ability to do that, regardless of this exploration project. And if the Secretary doesn't do that, the exploration is concluded, and Constantine submits a proposal for development, at that point, what options did BLM have? They do an assessment at that point, and can they impose any restrictions or do anything to stop what Constantine wants to do?
Yes, Your Honor. The agency will retain regulation authority, which is something that Connor addressed. That was also the case in Connor v. Burford, that the agency would retain authority to deny unlawful plans and to regulate and prevent mitigate impacts in a variety of ways. But the touchstone in Connor was complete preclusion authority because it is sometimes necessary, and the existence of the FLIPMA withdrawal provision is a great demonstration of the fact that Congress agrees with that. I see that I have only 4 minutes left, so with your permission, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
That's fine. We'll hear from opposing counsel. Are you muted?
Oh, I am muted, sorry.
That makes it harder.
Actually, I don't show I'm muted.
I can hear you now. Judge Walker, okay. Can you hear?
All right.
And Judge Beatty? Yes, and
yes, I can hear.
Okay. So I think the courtroom deputy must have helped me out. Again, I am Ellen Durkee on behalf of the Bureau of Land Management. I'm sharing my time with counsel for interveners, Mr. Clark, and I'll just mention that I think he intends to address this issue about whether it's really a final stage and so on. But what I would like to focus on first is just sort of remind us of what the parameters are here for NEPA. First of all, it applies when an agency proposes to take action under a particular statute or regulations. And NEPA works within the parameters of the law in which it's tied to. Now, I'm prepared to talk about why BLM's NEPA analysis is reasonable and appropriate, but I think I want to jump to what I think is most responsive to what was plaintiff's counsel was addressing. It seems to me that the plaintiffs and BLM's disagreement about whether BLM was required to consider and analyze potential future mine developments before approving an exploration plan stems in large part from the differing views of the parties and the different conceptions and assumptions about the mining law. And so I'd like to explain why BLM's conception and assumptions are correct. The mining law is a unique statute, and it was enacted 148 years ago. It formalized a pre-existing system of free access to the public domain for mining exploration and development. The law confers a right on citizens to enter and explore for minerals on open federal lands subject to regulation. The general rule is that public lands are open. The law also grants development rights by operation of law when there is a discovery of a valuable mineral deposit, which is a term of art that means more than finding minerals, and satisfaction of other statutory requirements. The key thing here is that accrual of development rights is simply not a decision that Congress left to BLM. So under this mining law, BLM can and does regulate how an operator conducts exploration and development activities. for the purpose of meeting specified safety environmental standards and to prevent unnecessary or undue degradation of surface and non-mineral resources.
Okay, can I jump in? Because I don't think anything that you're saying now is disputed by the other side. I think they're, in terms of this counter argument, they're zeroing in on the BLM's potential authority to go to the secretary and petition for withdrawal of the lands. And that is something that I guess if the BLM approves this project here and doesn't give the matter any further thought, the agency is giving up forever, assuming everything goes as planned throughout the next 5 years or so. The agency is giving up forever its ability to run to the secretary and petition for withdrawal. And so I, as I understand the plaintiff's argument, it's simply this. Shouldn't the agency, before giving up that right irrevocably, make a fully informed decision to do so? And how can the agency do that if it does not take into account the harm to the environment that might occur if, in fact, a mine development project eventually goes forward?
Well, Your Honor, I think there were several questions in there, and I hope that I answered them in the right order here. First, NEPA applies to proposed actions, and BLM did not propose to withdraw land. So it did not need to do a NEPA analysis for that purpose. What its proposed action is, and it's as defined by its regulations and by the mining law, is simply to decide whether to approve or disapprove the proposed exploration plan under a set of criteria that do not allow it to veto or nullify the statutory rights that the mining law accords. Now, this argument that is essentially saying, well, we'd like you to do a NEPA analysis, not because it pertains to this particular, your actual proposed action, but because we think that it might influence BLM at some point down the line to ask for a withdrawal.
There I don't think that's quite it. I don't think that, go ahead, Judge Watford.
No, go ahead.
Because I don't think that's quite it. I think what they are arguing is not just at some point along the line, but to Judge Watford's point, and his question was, why shouldn't the agency be required to take a look? Because at some point they will indeed, by as a function of the way the Mining Act works, right, lose the right to go forward and think about or consider whether to pursue this a withdrawal. What's the answer to that question?
Well, first of all, I do want to, I think you said it, but I want to make sure because I think it answers one of the questions is that they don't lose that right to ask for a withdrawal by issuing a mine at this point. It's not irrevocable. Many withdrawals are done at different time periods. But in terms
at some point
of,
they do, that goes to the earlier point, and I'm not trying to get in your way, but their argument is, right, that this takes the project one step closer, one increment closer, and that there's an indication that within 5 years at this point, it's now an indication within 5 years, the owners intend, hope, it's an aspiration, to move into the next phase. So really, if you could just circle back to the question Judge Watford and I now have both asked.
Well, I think it may relate to how plaintiff's counsel started her argument by saying that NEPA requires an analysis of anything possible. And I think that that's not actually accurate. It goes back to it's the parameters of the law that it's operating under and that it's applying and taking the action that define, the appropriate NEPA analysis.
But right, and I think, counsel, I think her argument, again, I'm not trying to tell you that I agree with opposing counsel or disagree. I'm just trying to get to answer her point, which is that by virtue of this particular law, that is exactly what she's arguing, by virtue of the way this law operates, that at some point the agency will lose its opportunity to go forward and consider whether to withdraw. Not at this point, but it is getting really close. And so hence Judge Watford's question, shouldn't they be required or why shouldn't they be required to consider that? That's all. That's the question.
Well, I think that You know, I guess I have a two-prong answer to that. First of all, I think it is relevant here that, I mean, to me, what it sounds like they're asking for is to that there should have been another alternative considered in the NEPA analysis that was done. But I would point out that no one ever asked for that. And under NEPA, you're supposed to raise concerns, particularly about alternatives. Leaving that sort of waiver issue aside, I think the point is that BLM can go ask for withdrawal. It doesn't need this NEPA analysis to do that. And in fact, in the example that they provided, the Lehman case, that's exactly how it happened. Now, the Lehman case is not a NEPA case. It's actually my contest. And within that, they're relying on some description of background. But what that background illustrates is that it was not through the approval, the mine approval process of an exploration plan or through the NEPA process that was ongoing for that, that, you know, made BLM decide to seek or to petition for a withdrawal. And only at that point, by operational law, when it seeks a withdrawal and it's published, then by operational law, it's segregated, and therefore it has the ability to deny and suspend the exploration plan. So what happened there is not, you know, it wasn't the NEPA process. It was actually, you know, political evidence.
Let me take another run, because I'm still not hearing an answer, or at least not a satisfactory answer to the question I posed. So they're saying that the agency is about to give up forever this authority that it otherwise holds on to as of today, which is to go to the secretary and petition for a withdrawal, as I guess occurred in that Montana case that you just referred to. And all they're saying is that how can the agency make a fully informed decision about whether to relinquish that authority if it doesn't right now get the information it needs to take into account the effect of going down one path or the other? That's all they're saying. I guess I'm still not hearing, why is that an unreasonable position to take, and why doesn't NEPA in fact require that?
Because there's nothing that requires BLM to consider whether to withdraw lands. I mean, and it, you know, and truthfully, it doesn't have the authority to do that. It can only recommend or seek it. But the path, well, and I guess I want to also point out, and I think the district court was right about this. These are two different processes, and they are governed by sort of different processes, and the withdrawal process has not been invoked and was not asked to be invoked and was not proposed. And, you know, the federal land policy management is very clear that withdrawal can only occur through that process, and it's very specific. And so what they're trying to do is somehow, I think, cabin this withdrawal process into what is actually a fairly discreet, and I guess we all agree that under those regulations, you know, it did what it needed to do, which is just look at, you know, at the actual exploration activities itself. So I think that sort of throwing this idea that somehow there's this possibility out there. I mean, an agency always can come up with some sort of possibilities, but it doesn't need to be looked at every single time BLM is presented with an operation plan. And there's nothing that points to saying that it has to. And frankly, I know of no, you know, instance other than the one that they've cited with, but that wasn't based on NEPA, and it wasn't based on the approval process. So in some ways, I think they're mixing sort of apples and oranges here. And, you know, I think that if they're if their goal really is to withdraw, which they denied was their goal in the reply brief, they should have asked for that. At least we would then, you know, then BLM would have had something to work with and to respond to. But instead, it only came up once it was in, you know, in district court. And so, yes, I don't have a record, you know, because this wasn't, you know, this wasn't an issue that was raised with it. But I think that if it, you know, that BLM could explain that, that they're not going, you know, they're not going down that path and they don't have to, you know, it's completely discretionary. There are no standards by which, you know, BLM has to ask for withdrawal and there's, it cannot be forced to do so. The other point I guess I want to make is about it. The conception that the approval of an exploration plan is indistinguishable from the issuance of the leases in Connor versus Burford. I mean, the reality is that for 148 years, Congress has retained the mining law for hard rock minerals, yet for many other minerals, it has created leasing statutes. And the paradigm is very different under a leasing statute and the mining law. The mining and the mining law, it is Congress, not BLM, it is Congress that has, you know, relinquish the authority to prevent, to preclude, you know, mining development, mining exploration. Under the mining laws, the Mining Mineral Leasing Acts, what Congress did is said, we're closing all the lands. No one of them are open to these minerals. So it's the exact opposite of what the mining law does. And then it gives Interior basically unfettered discretion to decide if it ever wants to allow any mining development and where that would occur and the terms in which it's, you know, it's going to do it. And it does that and exercises that through a lease in which the agency is directly and proactively granting development rights. And that's what was key in Connor. And I don't think it is analogous at all to say that something that may set off a long but for, you know, list of contingencies is equivalent to that. I mean, Congress just conceives of a very different approach under the mining law and the mineral leasing acts, and that has implications for what BLM's discretion is when it's presented with the mineral exploration plan. And it also has implications for what is the legal cause of if you know, Constantine is able, you know, is able to make a discovery and take care of other requirements to, so that a mining, development right accrues. I mean, that's kind of the public citizen angle, which is, just because it's a but-for cause and maybe, you know, sets off a series of things, that doesn't make it the legal cause. I'm going to stop here so that my co-counsel has an opportunity to share his thoughts.
Thank you, counsel.
Mr. Clark? Please report. My name is Jim Clark. I'm counsel for the appellee interveners. In 2015, when they submitted their mining plan of operations, Constantine did set out a 5-year implementation plan for exploration and said that assuming positive results, it would shift from exploration to planning and development, engineering and development. But in the reply brief and throughout the briefing, appellants continually talk about Constantine being in the last stage of exploration. And they cite for that excerpt of records 758 through 763, which is the 2017 BLM environmental assessment. And that assessment, which was prepared in 2017, in September 2017, 3 months before appellants filed their complaint, said that, and I quote, Constantine has not reached the point in their exploration work to make an informed decision to consider moving the project to the development phase. At page 763 in the excerpt of record, the BLM stated, and again, this is just 3 months before appellants filed their complaint, 28 months after the initial statement by Constantine, the BLM stated in September 2017, Constantine is in the early stage of the mine life cycle with operations currently focused on the exploration step and refinement of the inferred resource. Examination of the environmental impacts this early in the process is limited by the available information, both about the potential for future mining and about the natural environment. And
can I ask, counsel, because you're almost out of time, what's the relevance of these facts you're giving us?
Well, if in fact it was the appellants who are trying to say that the cumulative impacts applied because the mine was development was reasonably foreseeable because the Constantine project was in advanced exploration. And I think that since that's not the case, that the district court was right that mine development is not reasonably foreseeable at this point.
Okay. I just didn't know which argument you were focused on.
Sorry, I should have identified it, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I guess I'm out of time.
No, not quite.
Oh, okay. Well, I would just say then that the other thing that needs to be taken into account is the extent to which it's necessary to what BLM would have to do to hypothecate a mine. They would have to figure out the dimensions and location of the ore body. They'd have to figure out the mining method. They'd have to figure out what kind of processing facility was going to be used. They'd have to figure out what base management plans would be used. They'd have to guess at what how many tons per day would be mined. And this is all set out at page 28 of our brief. But it just is the reason why in its own environmental analysis in 2017, it said that the available information essentially was insufficient to figure out what potential future mine development would look like.
Can I ask one quick question? How do you respond to your opponent's argument that that what the plaintiffs are looking for or would be expecting is not some analysis of a specific mine development project that obviously doesn't exist yet, but rather what they want BLM to do is to make a threshold decision as to whether mining of the sort your clients want to pursue should be permitted at all in this area, right? So just a kind of yes or no answer to that question. And for that, she says, you don't need, you know, the specifics of exactly, you know, what mine would be here and how much would, you know, mine would be ordered and the like.
This gets back to a point that Ms. Durkee was making, Your Honor, and that is that under the Mining Act, under the Federal Land Management Policy Act and the regulations for mining under it, 3809, there are certain criteria for protecting surface resources, but there is no ability for the BLM to say no to exploration because my clients might find something, which is discovery. And there's no ability under FLTMA to say no, and you can't explore because you might find something. And the finding something is decided under the mining law. And as she pointed out in a public citizen, if you can't say no, if the agency can't say no, then what's the point of NEPA analysis? Because even if it develops NEPA analysis, it can't act on that analysis. And that's what the situation is here, that there's since they can't say no to exploration because you may find something, then they can't act on any information they might find, and NEPA isn't necessary here.
Any further questions?
I'm sorry to take you, we're over time, but I do have a question for you. Mr. Clark, in your brief, there's a couple of points where you indicate that maybe Constantine has already found resources of sufficient value that you could prevent the secretary from withdrawing the land. But you don't actually say that that's happened. So I wasn't clear as to what your point was. If that's already happened, it would seem as if this is all moot. But you don't explicitly say that. You just suggest that maybe it has happened. So what's the answer to that?
The reason I raised that, Your Honor, was because plaintiffs assumed that it hasn't happened. And it illustrates the fact that discovery is an act that goes under the Mining Act, not under FLIPMA, which was the action that was that precipitated the NEPA review here. It was the request for mining plan of operations approval under FLIPMA that precipitated the action. Plaintiffs say, well, we will assume that no discovery, because you're asking for exploration, that you haven't made a discovery yet. We won't know about whether a discovery has been made until there's been a feasibility analysis. But we have passed that portion of the test that calls for, is it reasonable to be spending money and labor on the area? We've been out there, as plaintiff's counsel has said, for a couple of decades and spent $40 million on the project. We have a good preliminary economic analysis that indicates it's a valuable deposit, but we don't have a feasibility analysis, and we have an inferred resource where we haven't completed our exploration, so we cannot say with any certainty that we have made a discovery. Just as they can't say that we haven't, it's an issue that really is a mining law issue. It's not the FLIPMA issue which precipitated this mining exploration request. And it's FLIPMA and the mining exploration request to which NEPA is attached, not the question of whether we make a discovery under the Mining Act.
We are now 5 minutes of time. Are there any further questions from my colleagues?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. I think opposing counsel saved some time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
There you are, back. Okay, good. Go right ahead.
I'd like to make two quick corrections based on what I heard, and then hopefully address two other issues. One quick correction. Mr. Clark said that referred to page 763, I think, of the excerpts of record, and the quote that Constantine is in the early stages of the mine life cycle. That does not address whether this is the last stage of exploration. All exploration is early in the stage of a mine life cycle, which includes engineering, extraction, processing, and closure, all of which can take decades. And the last stage, the parts of the record that we rely on for the proposition that this is the last stage are Constantine's own statements in its plan of operation at ER 302 and 293. Also, Ms. Durkee referred to the E.K. Lemon case, the IBLA case, and said that in that case, I believe she said it was not prompted by NEPA analysis. I would refer your honors to, the pagination is a little bit difficult in that case, but I'm quoting here. BLM issued a draft EA for the exploration, and then a little further along, the 1992 proposed EA was the catalyst for the set of events that led to this appeal. And the opinion also describes public opposition to the mine based on that analysis, which in that case was an analysis that addressed an exploration plan, just as we're proposing could happen here. Another comment that Ms. Durkee made that I want to address is that we're saying that every single time an exploration plan is submitted, the Bureau would need to do this analysis. That isn't what we're arguing. There are many exploration projects that can proceed without any approval from the Bureau whatsoever that are under the threshold for needing an actual Bureau approval. But also, the question the Bureau would face is, when faced with a specific exploration plan, is there a risk that we could be relinquishing authority? And if the Bureau could answer that question no, then the analysis wouldn't be required under the at least the Connor argument that we're making here. And that's
no risk. I mean, that's right. I'm trying to get a limiting principle about when you think this would trigger. Again, my view is that this is an incremental issue as this project moves forward, any project moves forward. So can you drill in on that for a bit?
Yeah, if the agency could be confident that it wasn't relinquishing its preclusion authority, then it wouldn't be running afoul of the principle that it can't make an uninformed decision that could ultimately lead to development lead to the loss of preclusion authority.
Anytime the agency's confident they're not relinquishing, is that your rule?
That's right. And in this case, we're well beyond that phase because, as I say, Constantine itself stated this was the final stage, not in so many words, but made clear that this was a 5-year plan, and at the end, they anticipated a shift to development. I'd also like to address the case Jones that Your Honor mentioned. So in that case, there was no risk that the authority would transfer because the mining was taking place on state lands, and so there wasn't a risk of a loss of preclusion authority. And there was less information available than here. There were two cumulative impacts arguments in that case. One was about general statements the company had made about a desire to increase mining across the entire Oregon coast. And obviously that is less specific than the information we have here, which is defined exploration at a single site. And the other was whether the agency should have included an analysis of sites that the company was not currently pursuing any development at. And that's not the case here either. Thank you, Your Honors.
Can I ask one just basic question that will expose my ignorance about how that law works? You've rested your Connor argument entirely on the BLM's authority, even though it doesn't have the authority to say no in its own right. It has the authority, you say, to run to the person who has the authority and ask them to say no. Can anyone ask the secretary to withdraw lands? I mean, could your clients go right now and petition the secretary to withdraw the lands and get a – because that's really what this is all about, right? From the standpoint of your Connor argument – it's just somebody needs to get to the secretary and make the case that mining should just not be allowed in this area at all. And so why is it so important that BLM be the actor if let's say your clients could do the same thing?
Yes, we could seek a withdrawal. We could petition for a withdrawal. However, the question here is what does NEPA require of the Bureau? And it's the Bureau's discretion to seek that withdrawal that allows, that requires the analysis. Basically, the fact that the Bureau has authority to seek absolute preclusion of this mine is what requires the analysis of what the mine might ultimately, amount to before committing to that path. And, I would also add that we weren't required to request a withdrawal here. We're seeking not a withdrawal, but information. It would sort of flip things on their head to say that my clients should have sought a withdrawal based on information that the Bureau is refusing to provide or consider in a public manner.
Any further questions, my colleagues? And thank you, all three of you, for your helpful arguments today. We'll go ahead and take this matter under advisement, and we'll stand in recess. Thank you.
Thank you.